have any rejection of self, avoidance of self, shame, guilt, can't let go of the past, still blaming another, that is literally an emotional charge stuck in your body that will vibrationally go out. It'll holographically be mirrored into your world, and somebody in your work environment or personal environment or family environment will reject you, judge you for the very same thing you are rejecting in yourself as a gift to wake the fuck up and heal this.
Thanks for pressing play. This is Christopher Lockhead, Follow Your Different, where we aspire to have real conversations that celebrate the people, ideas, and companies that stand out. We're sponsored, as always, by our good friends at Oracle NetSuite. Learn how to turbocharge the growth of your business today at netsuite.com/different. On this episode, we hang out with intimacy expert Alana Pratt, and she's the host of the Intimate Conversations podcast. She's a cum laude graduate of Columbia University, the author of 3 books. She's a celebrity intimacy coach, a regular on CBS, TLC, Fox, and many others. And Alana is also a former showgirl, and she loves to pole dance. We have a fun, playful, powerful, and dare I say, sexy conversation. And we talk about intimacy, relationships, of course, sex, the Me Too movement, what it means to have queen energy, how to own your sexuality, the power of vulnerability, and why Alana says sex is sacred. And we talk about how not to pee on yourself when you jump on a trampoline. You'll get some very key practical insights that you can put to use in your life right away. And just so you know, this conversation is what you might think of as sexy spice. So be forewarned. Check out the show notes for this episode at Lockhead, LOCHHEAD.com. You'll get the key takeaways and learn more about Alana's eclectic and fantastic background. And now, hey ho, let's go. So how are you, Alana?
I'm actually feeling really delicious today. Yeah, very good.
Delicious.
Thank you for asking.
Tell me about feeling delicious.
It's one of my favorite words. I don't know if you've ever heard of Dr. Christiane Northrup, big author, Woman's Bodies, Woman's Wisdom. And we were on this panel together. We were standing in line getting interviewed by the media. And she leans over and she says, "Hey, I heard you pole dance." And I said, "I do. Do you?" She goes, "Yes." So instantly I fell in love with her, and she was on my radio show, and she signed off one of her emails with "Deliciously Christiane." And I'm like, "Oh, you're allowed to do that? You're allowed to like sign off emails with something other than sincerely?" And it like opened up this Pandora's box of naughtiness and just full self-expression that I'd really never given myself permission to be or give or do or have or any of that.
So you were not the, and look, if I get inappropriate, just whack me under the table, but you were not the sort of, and I say this with tremendous respect, the naughty goddess that we've come to know today. Am I allowed to call you that?
It was the nerdy, insecure, whatever, dorky girl who always felt out of place, who eventually hopped on my Uncle Phil's 18-wheeler semi from Canada, British Columbia, down to LA.
How's it going,
to follow my dream. Hey, take off, eh?
It was so fun to, isn't it fun to find other Canadians lurking amongst Americans?
Lurking, I love that.
Accidentally just.
It's true. I moved to the States, and I had been a dancer since I was 5, but you know, very, very jazz, ballet, tap, you know, like little theater stuff, certainly nothing naughty. And then I moved over to Tokyo. They were doing a show in Japan. So instead of failing and going home and working for Pratt's Pharmacy, the little drugstore with the big heart, and taking over the pharmacy, I went to Tokyo.
You would have been such a great pharmacist though, Alana.
You think? Pushing pills. I did enjoy dropping off all those prescriptions to the old people who couldn't drive, and making contact with these people who had such stories. It was good memories, but no pharmacy for me, please. So yeah, I got to Japan, Christopher, and the very first show I had to wear G-string and fishnet tights, and I'd never done that before, and I was so...
How old were you?
I was 19.
Wow. And so what was that like? They said, hey, here's your outfit.
Where's the rest of it?
Yeah. Isn't it missing I don't know, pants or something?
That's right. I mean, if I had really enjoyed it to the degree I ought to have, like my butt at 49 does not look like my butt looked at 19. I ought to have been proud of its lack of double bounce back then, but but I was quite, I was nervous and I hadn't really figured out the sacredness of sexuality yet. I hadn't really owned the power of my radiance. I was just like a little...
Well, hold on. I hate to interrupt you, but I'm gonna.
What?
The what of the sexuality? The sacred what?
The who of the who?
What?
I believe that our sexual energy is life force energy. It's the very same energy that's spinning the planet, very same energy that's blossoming a flower, the very same energy that creates the birth of a child or an orgasm, the birth of a planet. Like, it's all that same energy. And
I think the birth of a planet and an orgasm are the same thing?
At the core of it, I do. I mean, that's what it feels like to me. What does it feel like to you when you have an orgasm?
I never thought it was like the birth of a planet, but I do think it's pretty fucking awesome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we're on the same page here.
Yeah, and we're this is going to sound terrible, but what the hell? We're going to jump in the pool. We're jumping in here, Alana. And it never gets old, does it? It's always awesome.
Right? Well, because it's so pure. It's so the root of existence itself through our very bodies. And yet I don't know about you growing up in Montreal, right? They're a lot more open there than British Columbia, but still there's a judgment to sexuality. Like, don't touch yourself there. Like, wank off when the neighbors aren't coming over for dinner. Like, all these like judgments.
You know, I still think wank off when the neighbors aren't in the house around, you know, I mean, have a wank for sure, but not... when the neighbors are over for, or is that what we do now, Alana? I don't know. You're telling, is this, what kind of intimacy expert? Are we an orgy expert too?
No. But
how to turn the neighbors coming over for Super Bowl Sunday into an orgy?
I don't know what was happening at your house, but that was not happening at my house.
Okay.
But the idea of, so many of my clients come to me with shame or guilt, or they think they're weird or broken with their sexual desires or the way they choose to make contact or have intimacy or connection, like whatever it takes for them to feel safe, authentic, real, all of that. There's so much shame from society or religion or parents or maybe what a girlfriend had said. And I just love being that space where, to me, it's all beautiful. It's all unique. It's all sacred. It's all this life force energy. And so much of our life of being unapologetic is stop apologizing for our existence, our desires, our uniqueness, and start to hang around with people that think we're pretty cool, as crazy and weird and, you know, dorky or sexy as we are.
Amen. Hallelujah, sister.
Yeah. So I think I've gotten off on a tangent here about orgies and sex, et cetera. But
that's okay.
The point is,
this conversations with me have been described as ADHD theater.
Perfect. I'm so glad, because I'm right
so
along.
So welcome to the theater. It sounds like you fit right in.
I'm glad. I'm so glad. Where's my whiskey? Okay. So sacred energy, like when we just are spinning in our heads, thinking, trying to do it right, trying to be in control, it's not fun. It's not sexy. It's not, you're not present. But when you drop into your body and you do enough work to forgive yourself and see the good that happened from those mistakes, and you can just be present, there starts to be this buzz in the body, this warmth, an energy, a yumminess. And that's way back to the word delicious, like a delicious capacity to just be in a business meeting, just be playing with your kids, just be with your lover. There's a deliciousness. Yes, sometimes the deliciousness has a bow chicka bow bow energy, like a real sexual energy when we think of like sexuality in the bedroom. But sometimes this delicious energy is tenderness, care, healing, patience, listening. Sometimes it's like creative, like I want to do a podcast, I want to write a book. Sometimes it's very generative. But to me, the sexual energy is all day long, every day. It's sacred. It's our birthright. And when you let it flow in you, as you, and through you, it's like you've got that it factor or that radiance or that invitational, dare ya, with a smile on your face energy, kind of all the time. And it helps you navigate really shitty things with more ease and grace. And to me, it makes me feel like I'm never alone. Like the universe is literally got my back and is literally breathing my very breath.
Wow. Getting profound on me right off the top here, Alana.
Well, okay.
No, hey, listen, I'll go wherever you want to go. I can hang out with you, hopefully. Now, I got to ask you, you know, what are the kind of, you started to mention it a little bit, this notion of self-acceptance. So what are the kinds of things that people come to you and say, hey, Alana, I need some help with X?
Yeah. Well, I'm getting older and my clients tend to be, for some reason, around my age group, and things are starting to shift in our bodies. Like there's erectile dysfunction or menopause is happening and they're dry, or they just have sort of lost their libido. They're empty nesters and they're like, what's next? What's next for the couple? What's next for my life? Like there's just these bigger, deeper questions and also physiological things that are happening that, I mean, that never happened to me before. I'm invincible. I'm perfect. Like, oh God, I'm actually not. How do I stay present with myself? How do I stay present with my partner? How do we not shame this, but be curious and move through, sit in the fire and move through it to some solutions and actually get closer to ourselves? Closer to our body, closer to our partner. These are some of the issues that people come to me with, and they just don't know how to talk about it. And they certainly don't know how to talk about it with their partner.
Hmm. And so how do you teach people to talk about whatever's up for them in the intimacy domain? How do you teach them to be able to talk about it with you and with their partner, or...
Well, I always like to start on the inside first. Although it sounds maybe kind of crazy, I've been trained in all sorts of different things and somatic healing and that our bodies are conscious. So I'll literally say, I don't want to talk to you. I just want to talk to your penis. Or I don't want to talk to you. I just want to talk to your vagina. Or I don't want to talk to you. I just want to talk to your heart. And it's really amazing when you get the cognitive analysis of the mind out of the way and you just go into the body, the awarenesses, the images, the feelings, the body sensations of our bodies. And more often than not, these quote unquote challenges or dysfunctions that are going on have to do with the way we're talking to ourselves, the way what we say when we look in the mirror, what we say when we go to the gym, what we say when we put our clothes on, what we say when we watch somebody younger and fitter walk by, or we watch our partner look at that younger, fitter person walk by. All these different things that happen get lodged as experiences in the body, and it's stuck energy. And often that stuck energy might look like not being able to get hard or last or juicy or what have you. But if you go deeper to the message behind it, one, you heal emotionally, spiritually. Two, the body generally comes for the ride. Ba-dum-bum-sh, comes for the ride. And did you get that one, Christopher? Did you? Okay.
I'm normally the one telling the cum joke, so I'm just reveling in your Alana-ness. Keep going.
Okay, thank you. So generally the body aligns with the inner integration, merging, and shifting of that emotional trigger. And then there comes this sense of confidence, but not attached to the result confidence, this ability to put down your walls, open your heart, and just speak what's true. And I give people this little way of speaking that I think goes over quite well. It's called the sandwich. I learned about this back in Toastmasters in the day when I used to run a Toastmasters with table topics. You don't just give somebody this information how they could improve, like critically go for the jugular, because it hurts. You put two pieces of bread on the communication. So you might want to say to your lover, hey, I love you. I love our journey. We've been through it all. You know, you're my best friend. Like something that's genuine, something of gratitude, something that puts their defenses down, something that creates affinity, something that connects the heart, opens the heart. And then the middle of the sandwich would be,
and
hey.
And then you whack them.
That's right. Where's your 2x4? Get it out. Then you ask permission. Hey, babe, can I say something straight to you, or can I be straight with you, or can I tell you what's been on my mind or what's been weighing on my heart? Ask for permission. Again, that allows the other person to prepare, open, and receive. You're not blindsiding them. And then you just say what's true, and you try to do it with an I, not you. I'm feeling such and such. I'm yearning for such and such. I'm missing such and such. And then the end of the sandwich could be something like, how do you feel? Or what do you think? Or what are your thoughts? Or have you been having any of these? Have you been noticing this? Give it back to them so that they are a part of this conversation, so that the two of you together can go into solution. And I find it's exquisite what happens when you present.
But it's got to be authentic too, right? Because I mean, I've heard this technique before and similar things and all that. But then sometimes people lay this shit on you, right? And you can tell it's like, oh yeah, here it comes, the shit sandwich. They're giving it to me, right? This is a management technique, right? And so I guess it's like anything. These things can feel manipulative-y, right?
Well, you make a really great point. And that's why I said a moment ago, we start on the start on the inside. If you haven't come to peace, presence, exhale, allowance with your penis, with your vagina, with your heart, with your soul, with your truth first, you're doing sprinkles on top of an ice cream cone of shit. You are manipulating and strategizing to try to make something happen on the outside. And it feels disgusting to the other person. You're totally right. So you have to own it first. Don't even open your fucking mouth until you're at rest inside first. Contact with self first, then contact with other, then surrender and allow what wants to arise between the two of you. It always has to start inside.
Hold on, slow down. That's really the hardest part. There was a lot there. Did you say surrender and what?
I don't ever know what I say. What did I say? Surrender and allow what
allow
is to arise. To arise.
What happens to arise.
Like
yes. Okay. I'm just trying to track with you.
Well, it's sort of like being interviewed right now by you. Like if I leave myself and I make contact with you first, like, oh, I hope it's going to go well. Or what does he think of me? Or if I do any of those kind of things, I've left myself and the conversation is forced. But if I connect with self first, And I'm a dork. I have like little stickers on my walls and on my mirrors, and you're good enough and you have permission to have it all. Like everybody likes you, and gosh darn it.
Remember Jack Handy on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, you're good enough. And what is it? How's he say it? Say it again.
Yeah, I think he said something like, and gosh darn it, people like me.
That's right. Gosh darn it. So most of us haven't had a perfect childhood. I don't know about yours, although I can't wait to interview you on my show and learn more. But my parents did their best, but one of them was drunk and stoned most of the time. So I literally reparent myself now.
Why would you criticize being drunk and stoned? Those are two of my favorite things.
it is true. I've had my fair share of journeys with
maybe the key part of the sentence was all the time.
Yeah. And I think the hardest part, honestly, Christopher, growing up in that environment was I never knew what was coming. Was it funny dad? Was it accusational dad? Was it lecture dad? Was it punch the hole through the wall dad? Was it doesn't come home and says he was home dad? Like, it was just so uncertain. And I was in this perma-kegel vagina clench for most of my, you know, childhood into my early adulthood.
A perma-kegel vagina clench?
Yeah, like, well, I know you
that
probably
sounds
can't
like
do
some kind of dark web MMA move. What is that?
Well, it's how my body reacted to being scared. I was so scared. I would like suck up my vagina. Like, you know, you could imagine sucking in your belly or sucking in your ribs. That's I don't know. That's just how my body did it. She was.
You can physically do that?
It's called a Kegel. Yes. Healthy vaginas do Kegels.
Isn't that just
Kegels.
Like a squeezy? I don't know. I'm not a girl.
Oh my god, like if I had any idea, we were going to get into Kegel conversation. This is so fun.
Well, okay. Can you Kegel, can a male sort of Kegel-y? I mean, you can turn the spout off.
I don't know, but I'll be super transparent. After giving birth, I took my son to trampoline, Sky Zone Park and everything, and we're trampolining, and I peed, like not a lot, but like a little bit. I peed, I'm like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. And it was because those muscles after giving birth got loose and I needed to do my Kegels so that I wouldn't pee when I went on trampolines anymore. So that's when
that's one of the greatest stories I've ever heard, Alana.
I'm so glad you enjoyed
the trampoline made you pee a little.
I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one this has happened to, but if indeed it's the case, all right, fine, I'm vulnerable. But yeah, Kegels help you grab your partner's penis more strongly during sex too, you know. Good stuff.
Wow. Is that really true?
Yes, it is true. It is true. I feel like this is a very intimate question to ask you, but have you ever felt your wife kind of grab you with her vagina? No. You're setting me up here. You're talking about this.
This is like the opposite of the Trumpian statement, right? This is the woman doing the grabbing.
Yeah.
I don't know that I ever quite thought about it that way, but if I think about what I think you're asking, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure like when a woman is in orgasmic state, you can tell the muscles in her vagina clench, release, this kind of thing, right? So those muscles, that's what we call the Kegel. And a lot of women who have had children, it gets loosened in there. So you need to strengthen it so you don't pee when you laugh, pee when you sneeze, pee when you trampoline. And then the benefit is your partner's even more delighted with your capacities. So anyways,
well, this sounds like an important thing to know about then.
Well, yes, I think it is. And especially as we women get older to have vaginal health, but I am not a doctor, but this is some of the conversations that come to me.
But you play one sometimes on the internet. Or no, maybe you play doctor sometimes on the internet. I don't know. You tell me.
No, I don't do any of that. But you know what? I was on The Doctors once, that show. And they, as soon as I started talking about the difference between clitoral orgasms and cervical orgasms, they just broke for commercial and they came back and they said, there's only one kind of orgasm and not all women can have them. And that's that. And it was just devastating.
Was it a dude who said that to you, Alana?
No, it was a woman. Can you believe it?
Oh, okay.
I know. And I help so many clients remove these traumas from abuse that a woman who's never had an orgasm can have an orgasm. A man who's having trouble with erections now has erections. Someone that could never really surrender and enjoy the connection and the beauty, and not even of the actual sexual act, just like relaxing and feeling safe. Like I'm able to help them have that. And to go on national television and curse people saying they'll never be orgasmic and just deal with it, I think it was such an atrocity. I'm not a doctor, but I just don't believe that's the truth. I mean, I think you can have maybe not clitoral orgasms or what have you, but I've done enough deep spiritual experiences to have full body orgasmic delights, dancing in nature. Like there's so much possible in meditative states. I was just quite pissed off at that. Doctor.
Did you just say you can have an orgasm dancing in nature?
It is a party trick I can pull out anytime. No, but yes, I have had probably only two or three experiences.
Like you might be an amazing person to go camping with then. And you're a Canadian gal, so you got to be tough in the woods.
I know. I wear my toque, the whole thing. It's all good.
I bet you have a nice toque.
I do. I have many toques. Yeah, no, it was strange. I will admit it was a surprise. It wasn't what I was going for. But there are, as I do more work in surrender, sacred sexuality, oneness with the divine, letting go of shame, healing traumas, as I do all my inner work for my clients so that I'm the best I can be for them, this thing happened. I was dancing in the garden and I felt so safe. You know, I was sharing before my permakegel growing up. I never felt safe. So I just decided I would let myself feel safe on the planet, in my skin, even though all these things were happening in that moment, I'm going to be safe and let myself have the delight of being alive. And it was a very beautiful experience. And I had this full on like vagina waves kind of internal orgasm. And it was like this full body kind of thing. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And I wish I could have it be like a party trick, Chris, but it can't.
I mean, I love my garden. I really do. I do.
And you may come visit Alana and frolic through and report back.
Yeah. And I don't know that I'd quite say that I've frolicked, but I've had a lighthearted time many a time in the garden.
Yeah.
And no such experience to report. And I've had euphoric, wonderful experiences, but not that one.
Well, too bad, so sad. But keep trying, Christopher. You never know.
I will keep trying that in my garden. Clearly there's something I need to surrender, I guess.
Oh, well, I highly doubt that.
But oh, I'm just fucking with you.
Just to open our awareness to the possibility that sexual energy is, one, sacred. Two, it's not just for the bedroom. You can have it all day long in your tender, caring, healing energy, your creative, generate energy. Even your standing for your truth, badass, don't fuck with me energy. Even that can be fierce love not anger. Even that can be a flavor of sexual energy. And of course, our sensual, sacred, energetic, kinky, wild, whatever your authentic flavor is. All of that is life force energy in you, as you, and through you. You can always be energized. You can always be alive, radiant, vibrant, youthful. It's good for the health. It's good for your point of view. I think it makes you sexy and irresistible. It feels like confidence for no reason, and letting go of attachment to the outcome, letting go of significance and importance. And it just sort of enlivens the delight of being alive, because we all have our challenges. We all have our ups and downs. My God, to be able to return just to this yummy energy, the delight of being alive, and certainly taking this into the Valentine's Day weekend, you know, not from the head, what do I need to do right to be loved, look good, do it right, get this result? But like, what would be delightful? What would be delicious? What would be a celebration of your sexual energy? Let yourself be dorky. Let yourself be kinky. Let it be you. Go a little deeper, wider than usual. Let your creativity fly. That would be my recommendation.
That sounds like a wonderful prescription. Now, one of the things that's on my mind as you talk is we live at an incredible time in history, I think, for women in our culture. Mm. And over the last plus or minus couple years, look, I don't quite know how to describe it, but there's been a huge awakening.
Yes.
And I think a huge, huge change. And I think probably on balance, 99% for the good. There are some negative ramifications, but that's true with anything.
Yeah.
So here's my question, though. So we live at this time where we're striving for equality, and we want to make sure everybody gets treated properly at work and all this stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm... And maybe you'll tell me for guys, maybe it should be a bigger issue for guys, but I go to women in my head and say, okay, so if I'm a woman and on one hand, I want to be taken seriously at work, I want equal pay, I want to be respected, and I don't want to ever be in a situation where I'm threatened or, you know, like, hey, fucking A, be a good person at work, right? I don't know why that's so hard to communicate that people should have, but that's what we're hearing. Us told, and it makes all the sense in the world. So in that environment where if I was a woman, want that to be true for myself and everyone else.
Yes.
And at the same time, Alana's saying, hey man, embrace your sexuality and have fun with it and play with it and all that. That, if you will, brings out the difference between me and the guys I work with even more. And maybe am I worried about the wrong messages? And so how does all this fucking work in the Me Too era, I guess, is my question.
Great question. So if you can feel into the energy of a woman who's like a damsel in distress, poor me, I'm a victim, life is happening to me, the man's getting paid more, you know, this real like, okay, so we're clearly not living there anymore. If we move up, in my opinion, the evolutionary scale, we could call it more of like a warrior priestess, like a warrior of the light, like a badass, I deserve equal pay. Like it's like a fiercer energy. Like it's a woman finding her spine, finding her worth, etc. Sometimes that merges over a little too much into the masculine, fair, tit for tat, you know, kind of middle ground energy. And what starts to happen is a judgment of her softness. We no longer see her softness, tenderness, empathy, compassion, listening, cooperative, those energies. We no longer see them as strengths. We only see this, no, I got to fight for it. And I don't think there's anything wrong about this. I think it's part of the evolutionary unfolding of a woman into what I'll call her queen energy. Okay. So this is, you don't want them to see that you frolic in the garden. You don't want them to know that you have a, like a perma-kegel in your, you just want it sort of almost turn into this neutered kind of robot kind of thing to play fair and get your right. It's very exhausting for women to be in that. It's scary. Everything is a comparison. You keep track of every little tit for tat, and it's not fulfilling. So my invitation as we're navigating this Me Too era is to move to the next place on this evolutionary scale, which I would call like a queen energy. And a queen energy is absolutely clear with her boundaries, clear with her worth. I mean, she's the fucking queen, right? She's the queen of the place. So she knows her worth already. She doesn't need to prove anything. She doesn't need to conquer over anything. She doesn't need to triumph over everything. She just already knows. When you go into a meeting trying to prove and get your worth as opposed to already knowing it, it's night and day. So there's that. And then a queen has a deeper, wider, broader sort of acknowledgement and owning of all her strengths. Yes, she can be a samurai warrior and get on a horse with her spear and like the rest of them, fine. And she has this boundary of don't fuck with me. Okay, she's got that. But on the other side, she can just look at you and listen and make you feel so safe, seen, heard, understood. She values the feminine qualities of collaboration. I don't know. Tell me what you know. She's curious. She doesn't need to be in control. There's an energy, as we spoke of this sexual energy, something so big, so wide, so grand, a possibility that nobody's thought about yet in the boardroom of a solution. She's actually the facilitator of that, holding that space. So she's got these deeper energies, these more integrated energies. So she's not going into the meeting with the Me Too movement of, I need to overcome and prove. She's already there. She's already owned it. So she's coming in worthy. And then when you ask for that new way we're going to be at work, when you ask for the raise, when you suggest this is the solution, you're doing it from a different point of view. You will be seen differently and you will be valuing the whole gamut of what it is to be a woman. And that would be what you do at work. And then when you're at home, you give yourself permission to surrender, to play more, not to have to keep working. You actually feel, like I was saying when I had that crazy dance experience of orgasm, you actually feel like it's okay to surrender. I don't have to figure it all out myself. It's not just up to me. I am co-creating with the divine. I can relax. It is actually safe to have ease. It's actually safe to be myself. This is a way of being that when you're back in that second stage warrior thing, you know it's up to you and you better do it and you better not let them see you sweat. You better be aware that you can get attacked at any moment. It's a scary place to live. Just keep moving. Keep growing. There's another phase that I'm just learning myself to be in where I can put down my it's sort of like Lady of the Lake, Christopher. Like, you know, she has her sword by her side. She doesn't lead with her sword. She leads with her heart. But her sword is by her side.
Yes.
So she's prepared.
And
she's discerning.
If she needs to, she'll remind people she has one.
That's right. She'll take off your head if she needs to, but she's not going to lead with it. And that.
So this queen energy, this is good. What you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. As you're talking, I'm thinking to myself about so many of the powerful women I know and work with and have worked with. And not all of them, of course. And somewhere on some kind of a spectrum. But many of them fit this idea you're presenting here of a queen energy.
Yeah.
And I know some that are very sort of in your vein, if you will. You can sort of feel their sexual energy, but they're not hitting on you. There's none of that going on. It's not that. That's a different thing, right?
Yes, thank you. Yes.
That's a very different thing because I'm a physical person. I'm a loud person. I spend a lot of time with women. I'm very comfortable with women. I was brought up by a single mother and my sister and, you know, was close to both my grandmothers and always had girlfriends, even as a boy and certainly as a teenager and ever since. It's very clear to me women with the most minute exceptions understand the difference between sort of being the way I am and, flirting or being hit on. It's a very different experience.
Yeah. There, to me, this, and it's such a great point, flirting. When you flirt from empty, you're trying to get something. But when you flirt from overflow, from fullness, you're actually, your energy is getting up under the other. You're helping the other to rise. You're seeing them, you're praising them, you're acknowledging them, you're playing with them. And it's a very different, elegant quality from fullness rather than the manipulative quality from emptiness. Yeah, totally agree.
So, and maybe you can share with me the kinds of things you share with, I was going to say younger women, but maybe it's women of any age. I don't know. Maybe you'll tell me, but I'm just thinking of some of the younger women in my life, nieces and the like. And so, you know, the sort of, my concern about the Me Too movement, is at least in part that, women feel like they can't be women anymore. Right.
Mm.
And a lot of the most successful and powerful, you know, I know this gal who is a gigantic executive in the tech industry.
Yeah.
And she, you know, runs a very big, very well-known public company. And
what?
She wears thigh-high boots and short skirts, and she's got long hair, and I mean, and she wears jewelry and shit, and I mean, and if she wants to wear high heat, like, there she is all she in on it. Woman, like, way woman. This is not, she's not in some Hillary Clinton pantsuit. No.
I love
now,
it.
By the way, she's totally appropriate, so she doesn't look like she should be, I don't know, clubbing or whatever, right? So she, yeah. But for the environment, whew, it's way high on the woman scale, and yeah. She doesn't give a shit, and she's a shit kicker, and yeah. she owns the whole thing.
Yes, love it. Ooh.
And most
yes.
of the successful women I know, not that all are out on the spectrum the way this gal I just described, but you know, I know women who behave and look more conservatively, but again, are a whole woman and aren't hiding out at being a whole woman. And isn't trying to be a man. And so I guess this is all getting to this place in my head, which is my concern about some of this stuff is that some women feel like they, in order to be taken seriously, in order to not have bad things happen to them in the workplace or elsewhere, that they need to woman down, so to speak, that there's something wrong with being female now. Yeah. Am I nuts? Is this happening?
Well, I would really like to meet your friend with the thigh-high boots because I'm focusing on hanging out with people like that. So I'm not aware of it, people having difficulty being women. Let me rephrase that. When you have an issue with yourself, when you are ashamed of a part of yourself, when you haven't let go of the past, when you're still blaming somebody for something that happened, when you're still guilty about your feminine desires, when there's any lack of intimacy with self, any lack of contact with self, any lack of being totally at peace with who you are, you will project that into your work situation, into your personal situation. You will be judged by the other, the very same shame that's going on in the inside.
Alana, can I stop you there? Can you say what you just said again?
I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have any rejection of self, avoidance of self, shame, guilt, can't let go of the past, still blaming another, that is literally an emotional charge stuck in your body that will vibrationally go out. It'll holographically be mirrored into your world, and somebody in your work environment or personal environment or family environment will reject you, judge you for the very same thing you are rejecting in yourself as a gift to wake the fuck up and heal this. So your example of the lady, she's done her inner work. She can own her badass. She can own her tender. She can own her shit kicker. She can own her listener. She can own her whatever. She's yes. somehow integrated all of those yes. emotional charges to be her authentic self. Not that we all need to dress like that, but she's authentic. That's our goal, to be our authentic self. So if it's difficult, quote unquote, to be a woman in the Me Too movement, et cetera, it's only because it's fleshing up. Where have you used your sexuality as a manipulation? Own it. Where have you been used by sexuality? Own it. Where have you played small? Own it. Where have you given up on your dreams? Own it. Where are you still blaming others? Own it. It's going to, whether you're a man or a woman, it's all getting flushed up as a gift. Because to me, it's not, our end game isn't about equality and getting equal. No, it's about the awesomest union between masculine and feminine energies within ourself and with each other and with the planet. That's really where we're going here. The most effective, aligned, synergistic union of these energies for businesses, relationships, and for ourselves.
Whew. That was awesome, Alana.
Don't slap your ass, Christopher. Isn't that a good
Don't or I you want
no,
me
do.
To?
I love to slap my ass. When it's a real humdinger, slap your ass.
Okay, I've now combined two ideas. We had Dr. Sean Stevenson on the podcast. He's
awesome.
You know him, I assume. Yes.
Yes. Mm.
And I don't know if you've heard him say this, but he every time he passes himself in the mirror, he winks at himself.
I love that.
Give him like a hey. You
hey,
man,
you
kind
sexy
of a
thing.
I can't remember exactly the words he used, but he winks at himself. He says he does it every time. And he
I
is kind
it.
Of a winker. Like he winked at me a bunch when we were together. And I'm like, I think Dr. Dr. Sean's winking at me. You know, he's a winker.
I adore that. I'm an ass slapper. Like,
yeah,
ever
so
since
I'm connecting
started...
the two things. Like, you should wink at yourself when you go go by a mirror, and when you say something funny or good, slap yourself on the ass.
That's right. That's right. Hell, sometimes just the fact that we got up is worth a slap on the ass. You know, some days are tougher than others. But no, there was when I began to do, I don't pole dance right now. I haven't, there's no studio where I live right now. But for a good 7 years, it was my church, my therapy when I was going through a really bad custody battle. And
these when you women, say, hold. You can't just say that to a guy like me and keep going. Now, when you say pole dance, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about the organization. I interviewed Sheila Kelly on my podcast, and she runs S Factor. It's a pole dancing fitness company. She does retreats, and she has different studios, different areas of the nation. I used to be, you might have to have me back on another show. I don't know if we can get it all in today, but I used to be a showgirl in Japan when I was young.
Right. And we started there, and I wanted to go back.
I know. Too bad. Now we're here. Okay, so I told Sheila about this, and I was terrified, Christopher, that everybody that was on my list.
And what's the definition of a Japanese show? What are we talking about here?
We're talking about like the Four Seasons Hotel, like these big clubs where the sexy dancers are on the stage, like the go-go girls, the showgirls, this kind of thing. Sometimes it was very Vegas-y, big feathers that came out 10 feet out, you know, big headdresses. Other times a little more... Janet Jackson video, Madonna video, kind of choreography, that kind of
stuff.
But
we're not talking, no judgment though, but we're not talking about a Vancouver strip club.
I've never been to a Vancouver strip club. Tell me about that.
You've never been to a Vancouver strip club?
I know, I'm so sheltered, but no.
Come on, are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh my God. Some of the best strip clubs in the world are in Canada. I'll just say this. It's the only time I've ever seen a... adult performer use a remote control tank.
Oh, this is reminding me of Bangkok. I have been
a little
to very,
Bangkokian. Yes.
A little Bangkokian where they're shooting the balloons on the ceiling with the, from their, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Ping pong balls and shit.
Sure. I've seen those shows in Bangkok, but
I don't know if that still happens in Vancouver, but there was a time.
Well, and so just for clarity's sake, no, that wasn't my number. That wasn't my little gig. That wasn't
so
my...
you were more like a what I would think of maybe as a Vegas-y type showgirl.
Vegas-y, burlesque, like full on choreography, amazing dancer, just super sexy and topless at times. Or sheer like mesh kind of outfits or like a blouse, but the blouse was open. So sexy like that, but not full on stripper or lap dances or ping pongs or
It. And that's fun. That's fun. I, a dear buddy of mine had a bachelor party in Vegas, and you know, he's not the kind of guy to go like do the mental sort of strippery stuff, but you can't have a bachelor party in Vegas without like having some naked ladies around, right? I mean, for the love of whoever you love. So I forget what the name of the show was, but we went to see one of these Vegas-y burlesque shows.
Nice.
It was outstanding. It was a ton of fun. And after the show, you get to meet all the gals and get their autographs and shit. It was fantastic. Highly recommended. And actually way better than the vast majority of strip clubs. And I've done a little investigation, so I have a basis for discussion. But so at 19, you're a showgirl in Japan.
Yeah. And really owning the beauty. I was with all these French girls and they were showing me the sacredness of our bodies and of this energy that we could wield the room to silence just by the way we were dancing. They were such fascinating teachers for me. I loved it. It wasn't until I returned to New York City and started going to Columbia and everybody said, what kind of dancer, that I began to feel shameful about the joy that I had free in my body, having a fuckload of fun, making a shitload of money, and like just being with these great girls that saw the beauty in our sexual expression and the lack of significance and the lightness of it and the playfulness of it. Anyways, back to the pole dancing story interviewing Sheila Kelly, I had been living in shame about this for a couple decades since returning from Japan. And she said, you need to turn your shame into your naughty provocateur and get into my class. And so I went to these pole dancing classes for close to 7 years. And it was true. I had forgotten how to touch my body just for like, hi, body. I would touch my body to get a man's attention. I would touch my body to be in competition sexier than a woman. I would touch my body like in all these other like agenda ways. But just to say, hey, sweet thing, hi. And like, oh my God, there's a body there that is alone or going through a court battle and needs a hug. Like I cried a lot of these times. So there was tenderness, connection to self. And then as I began to heal my heart and find my power again, thigh high, black patent, 8-inch heel boots, climbing a pole, turning upside down, putting your feet on the ceiling, stamping the ceiling with your feet, sliding back down, slapping your ass. Of course, we have to always slap our ass. And then roll down on the floor. I'm like, I can get through this court battle. I can do this. Look what I just did. And the girls are all cheering. You go, girl. It was such a nourishing environment where every age, every body type, every level of dancing was celebrated. This is the bit about the woman that you referred to before with, the, you know, she's just owning all of her with no apology in sisterhood. Ooh, I think it brings out the best in men. I think that's actually what awakens a noble badass as a woman in her true, full, rich, unapologetic power from tender to bold.
It's interesting that you say that. That has always been true for me. I'm not interested in damsels in distress or like I... And not just in women that I've been in a committed relationship with, but the women in my life. If I introduced you to, you know, the 10 women I see the most in my life, you would see a lot of badassery in those women. Like,
well, this is really good.
And also 360 in those women. Beautiful. Yeah. You know, no, want to go out and have a nice dinner and get dressed and put their makeup on and all that. And you know, some of whom, of course, are mothers, and they're like just ass-kicking mothers and, you know, incredible entrepreneurs. And just like, you know, I know a lot of women who are plus or minus the whole package. And that's, to your point, those are the women attracted to, certainly in a sort of a relationship orientation, but more than that, attracted in the much broader sense. They're the people that I want in my life.
Thank you. And if we just stay there for a second and we look at the Me Too movement, the women that are suffering in it or the men that are suffering in it, that's like the shadow feminine, the shadow masculine. This is an invitation to wake up into this full-bodied woman that you're speaking of that awakens the best in you so that both men and women wake up. Like this is not a bad thing that's going on. This is what the invitation is. And so if you just for a second share with your listeners, like what happens in you when you're around these amazing women who are living their fullest?
Well, you know, I mean, I start with the woman I spend the most time with, my wife. I mean, I wake up in the morning and I'm just in awe of her, right? She gets more done in the first hour of the day than most people accomplish in a week, I think. I mean, she's the single most effective person I know. And so, and the craziest thing is a lot of people who are sort of that, if I could call it task-oriented, result-oriented, tend not to be very creative. Well, the other half of her is insanely creative, is an artist, is a home designer. Mm. You know, so I just see like female badassery. Oh, and she swears more than I do. And she's deeply trained in Krav Maga and karate and kickboxing. And I mean, God forbid anybody ever try to do something to her because they'll be lucky if they're not in a pine box. And so everything about her is just this incredible badass woman. And, you know, those are the women that I love. My mother's a, you know, single mother and had to fucking, you know, really make it go. And it was hard to make it go. You know, my sister's the mother of triplet girls.
Wow.
You know, all the women in my life, I mean, my wife's sisters are fucking ass-kicking, gorgeous, sexy, fun, smart. Most of my buddies are married to women like that. You know, a good friend of mine, Alyssa, you know, mother of two boys, head nurse, unbelievable at her job. She's one of my favorite people to surf with. She's, I think she's absolutely gorgeous. You know, she's just fucking, that's the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what we're really getting at, which I love, is that when we do enough of our inner work to put to rest the demons or the doubts or the shames or what have you, and we just start being unapologetically who we are, not only does our life work, we wake up the best in others. We bring out the best in others. And that's really, if I had to, like, what I want to do with my practice and my life is just, if people can be unapologetically who they are, slap their ass a lot, drink whiskey from time to time, dance in gardens, I don't know, all these fun things, and be free, we wake up the best in each other, and the world is going to go in the direction that we choose. And if we instead do the opposite and blame or hide or blame ourselves or stay in shame or are in these trepidatious states where we're not even free to be who we are or say what we desire, again, from the boardroom to the bedroom, the same thing, that's when we suffer. That's when the planet suffers. So to give yourself permission this Valentine's Day, but like every friggin' day, fall madly in love with who you are, even the wobbly parts, especially the wobbly parts. So there's no inner conflict. So you can just be present and then be brave, be bold, speak from your best self, go for it. You've only got one life, at least this round, and live it and give it and slap your ass and hang out with people that see the best in you and be willing to let go of the ones that don't. Thank you for the lesson. Thank you for the gift. And I'm moving on now, you know?
Yeah.
It could be your Valentine's Day is about ending this year rather than stepping in, but it's all good.
So long as that's a big one, you know, to wrap your head around, not all relationships are meant to last forever. And just because they don't doesn't
mean
you're
not wrong.
Right. Yeah. Even if they didn't end, you know, in a particularly great way, that's all right.
You can learn from that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm only a month out of completing a 1-year relationship, and there was some tears and there was a lot of lessons. And if we were to go back to that masculine, feminine energy, like I've learned a lot about myself and my own masculine and feminine energies. And I'm never going to stop growing, never stop opening, never stop being that vulnerable person that walks or talk in my newsletters and said, here's where I'm a hot mess today. And here's where I knocked it out of the park, and give all permission just to keep going. Yeah.
Alana, you're incredible.
Oh, you're very kind. I really look forward to getting to know you more, featuring you in my world. I'm glad to know you exist. It gives me inspiration, to say it lightly.
Well, that's very, very sweet of you. I'm so glad that Senator John Berghoff connected us.
With his little Inuit outfit. How cute was that?
Oh, my God. He is so funny. And he's one of these very subversively funny people.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Because he looks like a, you know, mild mannered, and he presents himself in a very professional kind of way. But there's this whole other thing.
He came to me the second morning after I met him. He's like, I stalked you on YouTube. I got to introduce you to my friend, Chris. You guys got to get on the show together.
You're funny.
And so I'm like, oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, Alana, this has been great. Happy Valentine's. Oh, I've been told it's Valentine's week now.
Oh, okay.
So happy Valentine's week.
Beautiful. And I wish you a wonderful week with your luscious wife, who seems amazing. Great choice for both of you. And thanks for being examples of what's possible.
Well, thank you for being an opening for creating what's possible.
Thank you.
Happy Valentine's. Whew. Alana Pratt. How'd you like that? Now, as you know, family-owned businesses are the lifeblood of the economy. However, these businesses face challenges with things like managing accounts and inventory and spreadsheets, or creating invoices with Word documents, or hosting their websites on entry-level internet hosting services. Most smaller, family-oriented businesses really have disparate systems and kind of an ad hoc approach to, if you want to call it, business management. And as a result, you don't have very much visibility into your operations. It can often lead to poor reporting and make it hard to really grow your business. And so if you're a family business that wants to focus on growth and needs to make decisions based on solid data, I would encourage you to check out my friends at NetSuite. NetSuite is a complete business system. It's a platform for growth that deals with every part of your business, allowing family-owned businesses the ability to thrive and adapt and to make really good decisions across every critical function in the business. Invoicing, billing, collections, accounting, customer service, inventory, complex data spread across multiple locations, and integration with your website if you're selling directly on the internet. That's why NetSuite is the platform for growth for family businesses. And for listeners of this podcast, NetSuite is offering a free one-hour growth review with an expert in your industry. So check out netsuite.com/different, and there you can set up that free growth review. And if you want to send us email, we're going to try and do some more Q&A shows. Send email to blackhole@lockhead.com. And if you want, you can hit me up on Twitter @Lockhead or on Instagram @Lockhead. And my nephew Finn says my Instagram sucks. So you can see how much it sucks at Lockhead. All right. We would like to thank the Intimate Conversations podcast with our friend and guest today, Alana Pratt. Also check out alanapratt.com. She's got a very captivating and engaging website. It's ALLANAPRATT.com. Niche down, how to become legendary by being different, the number one bestseller by Heather Clancy and myself. Check it out on Amazon.com. Niche down. OneLifeFullyLived.org. We're the nonprofit helping you plan, dream, plan, and live your best life. We try to take all of the best thinking about financial planning and financial literacy, as well as some entrepreneurship and personal development, and roll it all together in a very cost-effective package. So check out OneLifeFullyLived.org. Now, if you're an entrepreneur, you work in an entrepreneurial business, or you're an entrepreneurial person, why not check out GrowWire.com? This is the new place on the internet for stories of innovation. And are you at a point where you need some help? Is it time for an assistant? Have you thought about maybe a virtual assistant? Why not leverage the power of a virtual assistant at bottleneck.online today? And if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, the Silicon Valley area, and you are an enterprise business, that is to say in the B2B space, check out Otranet, A-T-R-E.net. Otranet has been building B2B websites for enterprise businesses in Silicon Valley for over 20 years, and they will make your website behave and act just like your best spokesperson. Check out Otranet. And a nonprofit we love, Kiva.org, helping small entrepreneurs in the developing world with microfinance loans. To make a difference, check out kiva.org. All right, I need to remind you that this podcast is the sole property of the Lockhead Podcast Network, and all rights do remain perturbed. We must warn you that this podcast is clearly produced in a studio that does contain nuts. Teach intimacy. Remember that make sex fun, or make fun sex. I don't know. Make fun sexy. Make sexy fun. Make fun sex. Sex sex. Fun fun. Please take note that this podcast may contain some very bad ideas, and generally goes down easier with an adult beverage. Don't be lame. Get out of the passing lane. Remember to channel your queen energy. And while you're at it, listen to Queen. Thank you so much, Candy Dandy. I love you, Mom and Dad. Hey, Colin, this podcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go out to Richard Kelly, chairman of Pacific Gas and Electric. Sorry, Dick, we just ran out of time for you. Thank you so much for investing part of your life with me. And until next time, follow your difference.